This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Good morning and welcome to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. The doc is away today, it being the Memorial Day weekend. This is Jim Russ sitting in for him. Welcome to the best of Tech Talk. We have all the stuff you're used to. We have your chance to win a great prize later on today. So stay tuned, pay attention, and we get started now with the mailbag here on the best of Tech Talk.
Now it is time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Yeah, we got an email from PL in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, I turned on my laptop on April 13th and Nod 32 said I needed to get Microsoft updates because I was not current. So I clicked on that and they began to download install. It took forever. There were 46 updates on April 13th for Win XP in Office 2010. Could I have been using my computer to surf the net while this download install is being performed? I wasn't sure, so I just waited until it was completed and then restarted my PC. Thanks, PL in Bethesda.
Should be waiting impatiently in Bethesda.
Yeah, well, you it sounds like you had not updated your machine for more than a month, because there's an every month Microsoft has Update Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And let me see, was April 13th on a Tuesday? Let me see what the...
No. It was on a Saturday. It was last
April
Saturday.
13th is Wednesday.
Wednesday?
And so the April...
Oh, right, yeah.
So April 12th was Update Tuesday.
So I was
down in Atlanta, Georgia at a sax workshop. This is an accreditation workshop. And I turned on my machine and I had to do updates too, but I only had to do 22 updates.
Mm.
For Update Tuesday. Now, I'm thinking that if he had 46 plus updates, he probably missed the previous Update Tuesday and he put two together, because Microsoft does about 20 to 25 a month.
Mm-hmm.
They average about one patch a day.
Wow.
So it's, a lot. They're trying to fight the battle. Fight
pretty
the good battle.
Amazing when you think about it.
Yeah,
and
all of those updates are free, just mm-hmm. as part of your normal upgrade price, which is actually kind of a good deal.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what I mean, technically, since you were out, 46 updates weren't there, you could have had some vulnerabilities in there, but there's no reason why you can't surf the web. So while these updates are downloading, installing, I just keep surfing the web. I mean, it's a pretty small risk that I'm taking, actually, but you don't really have to wait for that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're finished installing them, you do have to reboot the machine or they don't take hold.
Right.
So I go ahead and just surf the web, and when they're finished installing, I just allow the reboot to occur. Now, if you want to be absolutely sure that you are not going to have any vulnerability, then simply wait until they've all installed and then surf.
And come back tomorrow.
But I just don't have that kind of patience.
I know you don't.
Email from... Tiffany. Tiffany. Dear Dr. Schertz, I've returned to the same coffee shop where I was a few months ago. Must be a Starbucks. She didn't want to say it. When I noticed my email had been hijacked.
Wow.
This time I'm using my phone. But last time when I noticed the hack, I was using my computer and doing email over an open internet free Wi-Fi network.
Ew.
Do you think that could be the source of a problem or just a coincidence? Thanks, Tiffany. Well, Tiffany, I don't think it was just a coincidence. I think you probably were. Somebody did probably sniff your password as you were putting it in over the open network. It's very easily done. And there are software programs that can grab it. Now, but you can use these Wi-Fi networks safely. Now, let me just explain a few things that you want to do. First of all, you want to make certain that your firewall is turned on. See, when you're at home, you might have your firewall off because you're behind another firewall router and you don't need that. But you want to turn on your firewall. By the way, that's because people can actually look at the local network, and if somebody has their firewall turned off, they might be able to look at all the shared file directories on somebody else's hard drive. I mean, in fact, you've got to do this in a hotel, too, even if you're hooked to the Ethernet. You can go to network neighborhood, and you can look at all the people who are logged onto the hotel network.
Oh, yeah.
And some of these folks have shared folders that, you know, because they want to copy files back and forth at work, and they're shared, and they're not password protected, and anybody at the hotel can just grab this stuff and go. Grab and go. So I never do that, but I like to look around to see who's vulnerable.
Yeah.
It just gives me
it's a learning experience.
It's a learning experience, but I don't grab and go. I just look and leave.
No, it's for purposes of our own edification on
That's
the radio.
Right. So make certain your firewall is turned on so somebody can't get into your hard drive. Then when you want to do anything that requires logging in, you want to do secure socket layer, SSL. Now, if you're using Outlook Express or any of these standard POP, like Outlook Express, Windows Mail, Windows Mail Live, Thunderbird, you actually have got to configure those to use Secure Socket Layer, and you go into the configuration and do that, and you may have to shift the port to do that. It's a little bit more complicated. More than likely, though, you were using something like Gmail or Hotmail or Yahoo and logging on. Now, you can choose in all of these cases an HTTPS option, a secure socket layer option, and you can go into the configuration and you can set it up for that, in which case your password then is fully encrypted when you log on. However, not all of the email services maintain that secure socket layer after the log-on page, and your emails could then be unencrypted and read if somebody was so interested.
Right.
The only one that can reliably keep in a secure mode is Gmail. When you and so you can configure Gmail to be an HTTPS, you go into configuration, and it always stays encrypted. And that's the only one that I would trust when I'm sitting there logged on at a Starbucks, for instance. I don't do anything else. And you really don't want to do online banking there.
No, that's a really bad
unless the online bank also has an encrypted password, but HTTPS input. Now the other thing is Facebook is actually a little bit unreliable. You can use require HTTPS or secure socket layer option on Facebook, but what happens is when you have various Facebook apps installed, it kind of drops out of that HTTPS mode, and these apps start logging into your system on their own without that HTTPS,
mm-hmm.
and bingo.
Yeah.
They're giving out your password to everybody. So I don't think you can trust Facebook there. Now, of course, if you're a business user and you really got super secret stuff, you could have a paid VPN, virtual private network, where you basically have a server, you get an encrypted pipe to that server, and all of your internet requests come out from that particular proxy server that you've got an encrypted pipe to. And you can normally get VPN services for less than $100 a year. So if you're really a super-duper business traveler, you could do that, in which case everything is encrypted, and then it doesn't matter whether you use Facebook or whether it's HTTPS is actually enabled or not. Now, the final bit of advice I would give you, do not make all of your different email accounts, Facebook accounts, and Twitter accounts with the same password.
Yep.
Because if that password is then compromised, everything is compromised.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's like convenient to have one password, like the name of your dog.
Right.
But you want to have a hard password to predict, and then you want to make a different password for each item. Now, you know, I mean, there are different methods to come up with all kinds of passwords. I probably have 15 or 20 passwords, and so I've got to sort of develop methods to keep all of these straight.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I have a formula that I use, but they're different for everything.
It's different for everything. And so you can, you know, some people will like take a word or a sentence, and they'll take the first letter of each word in the sentence, mm-hmm. and use that to make a password.
Mm-hmm.
And they might say if an S shows up, they'll make it a dollar sign.
Right.
And they might say if an uh, it, You know, and so that if an O shows up, they make it a zero. And so they, you might have something very simple like that, and you could say, you know, then you could just say, okay, my password is the dog jumped over the moon 55 times. And then you could just make, convert that in, and then you could use those conversion techniques.
Right.
And then at least you can remember it. So you want to develop some technique like
thing.
That.
Come up with some sort of a formula, but it's something that means something to you and that you can remember.
Now, so Tiffany, I hope that gave you some advice. I don't know if you can get back your email account once it's been hijacked. Now, if it turns out that they have not changed the alternate email address, you could click on that you need to reset your password, and they'll send a notification to your email address, and you can reset the password. If, however, the person that hijacked it has changed all that data, you're stuck. You probably can't get it back, and you'll just have to open up another one. So, you'll have to be careful the next time. Okay, we have an email from David. Dear Tech Talk, I'm trying to look for a technology job, and I don't know where to turn. I've been sending out hundreds of resumes. That doesn't sound good either, does it?
No.
Just not thousands. Hundreds of resumes and getting no response. What do you suggest? Thanks, David. Well, David, resumes are probably not the best way to go. In fact, we have all of our – we've got actually a – at Stratford University, we've got a 93% placement rate, and we actually show our students how to get jobs. There's a method to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would advise that you buy the book, What Color Is Your Parachute? By Dick Bowles. I mean, it's been on the bestseller list for 25 years, and there's a certain methodology to this that's quite good, where you first of all figure out what you're good at and what you like to do. Instead of just running around trying to snag a job, figure out who you are. So if somebody asks you to summarize yourself in 2 minutes, you could actually summarize yourself coherently and say who you are, what you're good at, what you like to do, and so you could actually make a presentation. But that takes a lot of introspection to get to that point, and What Colors Your Parachute has exercises to do that. Then they have a process of surveying, where if you want to go into a particular field or a particular area, first of all, you decide where you want to live in the country. Then if you want to work for a particular type of company, you survey all of those different companies, find out about them, and then you can actually go to the companies and survey and talk to people from those companies. You don't have to actually apply for a job. And they give you the methods of doing informal surveys, formal surveys. And that process of talking to people is a very good strategy, talking to people other than HR.
Mm-hmm.
The other
mm-hmm.
thing is you can join users groups. I advise this. If you're interested in Oracle, join the Oracle users group. Find a way to meet professionals outside of the HR function.
Right.
And behave like a professional. You could go to conferences that aren't too expensive. There's some local conferences that aren't really that expensive. Go there, go back to the coffee, and then, you know, talk to people. So you want to just sort of get into the field very slowly, and you want to talk to people other than HR. This book gives the whole process for that. I highly recommend it. Read that book, and then get back to us with your final results.
Well, we've talked about this before on the show. There are some professional trade publications you can pick up too.
Yes, that's right.
What would you suggest that would be a good reading?
Well, I call them the industry rags.
Uh-huh.
like network news, computer news. There are a whole series of them that you can that come out weekly, and they're free. So you can just basically toggle on the internet for computer magazines, computer news magazines, computer industry updates, Oracle, and there are a whole series of them. And then you can apply for them, and you'll get them free. And if you read these industry rags, you've got also something to talk about in an interview, and that's really what the people in the field do. Now we have one other email that actually I put it back in later in the show, but I think
okay.
I should make it. We got an email from a loyal listener in Bowie, Maryland.
Uh-huh.
And I made this a news article, but actually it was actually an email. It said, "Dear Tech Talk, I want to buy a new phone from Verizon, and the HTC Thunderbolt 4G was just released. It looks beautiful. It's got all these applications. It's fantastic. I want to just go down there and buy it."
Mm-hmm.
Now listen, what do you think, Tech Talk? Should I get this phone because I'll be stuck with it 2 years, or what should I do? What are my options? Well, loyal listener in Bowie, I looked at this Verizon 4G phone, Thunderbolt. It's from HTC. It is fantastic. It's got an Android 2.2 operating system. It's got all kinds of useful applications. It's got some bloatware that you probably have to uninstall. And it operates with this, you know, on the fourth generation network, which gives you 7 to 15 megabits per second download. I mean, it's a lightning fast download. Now, here's the problem. But there's a but to this.
There's always a but.
Yeah. By the way, the fourth generation network is called LTE. When you're operating the 4G mode, the battery life is 1.5 to 2 hours.
Ew.
Now, I'm thinking to myself, if I've got this cell phone and I try to go to work, by 10 o'clock in the morning, my cell phone battery's dead.
That's not good at all.
No, I guess to get through the day, I guess I could carry four batteries with me.
That's self-defeating, isn't it?
Yeah. At least you can change the battery, unlike the iPhone,
where you
can't remove the battery.
Right.
I guess you could take a charger with you. Now, it's that 4G is a power hog, and you can't turn it off. But if you go and get this special unauthorized app, which you can download, you can turn off the 4G and operate in 3G mode, and the battery life goes up to 3.5 to 4 hours. But then why would you want to buy this expensive 4G phone and only operate it in 3G?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say Verizon and LTC, you better go back to the drawing boards.
Sounds like that's a you better wait on this.
Yeah, I'd say if you want to get a phone now, I'd get the iPhone 4. I mean, the iPhone 4 will, you know, if you're not a heavy user on the iPhone, it will last 7 hours during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some folks at Stratford have the iPhone 4, and they actually have a little separate external battery pack that they plug in. So the battery's dead around 4 o'clock. So they plug in that booster,
yeah,
and it gets them to 6.
Great.
So they can at least make it through the day with this little booster. And so if
you
really
want people hard if they're there until 6 o'clock at night.
I know. I make them get there from 6 in the morning till 6 at night.
Wow.
And that's longer than – that's 12 hours,
mm-hmm,
and that's longer than the battery life on the iPhone 4.
I don't know if that can
work
for you.
So, you know, and so I cannot let people work for the length of the battery life of their cell phone.
Exactly.
Otherwise, everybody buy an HTC. Thunderbolt.
Hour and a half later, they're gone. All right. How would folks send you an email? Because we love your emails.
We do love your emails. If you want to send us an email, send it to techtalk@stratford.edu, and that'll be forwarded right to me. And we love to get these emails because they make the show so much more interesting.
Yes. It's Saturday morning. It must be Tech Talk on Federal News Radio. In Washington, D.C., you can hear us on 1500 AM and on 103.5 FM HD2. In the Virginia suburbs, 107.7 FM HD2. And north and west of D.C. in Frederick County, 820 AM. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Best of Tech Talk.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers, here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is the best of Tech Talk. Dr. Richard Schertz is off today. This is Jim Ross sitting in for him, but as he would like to say,
now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Thank you, Mr. Big Voice.
There
you're right on the money.
I'm telling you, two for today.
Today we're going to be talking about Robert Kalin. Robert Kalin is the founder and now CEO of Etsy.com, E-T-S-Y.com. Etsy is an online marketplace for buying and selling all things homemade. Mm-hmm. Artists put their stuff up on Etsy.
It's a pretty cool website. I'm looking at it right now.
Now, Robert Kalin was born in 1980. He's the son of a Boston furniture maker. Now, Robert, you know, did not have a great academic career. He dropped out of high school.
Okay.
There's kind of a theme here for these IT
guys.
Yeah,
there is.
I think, you know, I don't know.
The thing is, they're bright, but they're just not
I think
into the book thing.
They're just, he dropped out of high school, but he later earned his GED.
Good
I mean, his mom and dad were really happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he started as a very auspicious career at, with cashier positions at Marshall's and then at Strand Books. He was also a freelance carpenter, and the job that he actually hated the most, he hauled barrels of broken concrete for a demolition company.
Oh, that sounds like tons
of
fun.
Yeah, now that was just, that's when he knew he had to get into IT.
Uh-huh.
Now, he had briefly attended the School of the Museum of Fine Arts, but he didn't stay there long. He then faked an MIT student ID so he could take, classes on the sly at
nice.
MIT.
Great.
He so impressed his professors at MIT that they helped him get into NYU. I think the guy's a bright guy.
Yeah.
He just was a little misguided.
Uh-huh.
So they helped him get into NYU, and he went to NYU. He actually did graduate from NYU in 2004. Now, he got a Bachelor of Arts, but because he really couldn't decide what courses to take, it didn't add up to any particular major. So he got a Bachelor of Arts in what they call individualized study.
Which equals I can't figure out what I want to do with
so
my
that's,
life.
So that's what you do if you don't meet the requirements for any major.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you just have individualized study.
Uh-huh.
Now, while at NYU, most significantly, he learned how to build a website.
Uh-huh.
Now, at age 25, when he got out of school, he decided to follow in his dad's footsteps and become a furniture designer. So he worked each day out of a cramped Brooklyn apartment, trying to scratch out a living, selling his stuff online.
Hmm.
And when he was surfing hours on the web, looking for a site that would allow him just to sell his furniture in just the way he wanted to, and he couldn't find anything that met his needs, bingo, he got an epiphany, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
The idea for Etsy came to him. Why not create a website for artists and furniture makers to sell their goods
mm-hmm.
that just is for the people making the goods? And that was the seed of the idea.
A lot of these things that we talk about in IT were created out of necessity.
Yeah, I mean, he wanted to, and he needed it, so he just started building it. So he designed the Etsy site and wrote some online copy, you know, what it would look like, how it would work. He convinced a couple of friends from NYU, Chris McGuire and Chaim Chopik. They were two classmates, to help him develop the site. Now, they actually spent 2.5 months of intense labor getting the site up and running. Now, for capital, he turned to people he knew. He went to a furniture customer who bought furniture from him, and that furniture customer gave him seed money, $50,000 seed money,
wow.
to start Etsy. So that was like the so-called angel investor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they wrote the site, they used PHP, which is an open-source scripting language. It's one of my favorites, and which is a very common scripting language for database-driven websites. They used Python, which is actually a way to script PHP quickly. He used PostgreSQL, which is an open source SQL, similar to MySQL, but it's a different flavor. They used OpenBSD, which is a Unix platform for their server, and they also used Gentoo Linux, which is another open source. So you see a pattern here. Every single program I used to develop the website was open source.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Etsy was launched June 18th, 2005 by iOSpace. That was the name of the company, iOSpace. That was a small company that was composed of Robert Kalin, Chris McGuire, and Chaim Shopik, the three guys that developed it. iOSpace. I guess that stands for input-output space. I don't know. It's kind of a not really that clever of a name, but that's what they went with. Now, when they launched the site June 18th, 2005, the servers were still in Kalin's apartment there at Fort Greene. But the site caught on almost immediately and started garnering users. Now, what actually happened? About the time the site launched, eBay was stumbling. They had raised their rates. They were having a major upheaval on eBay store owners that were operating. And so I think that helped them get an initial surge because it was pulling customers from eBay. And once it caught on and he got up and it was clear that it was growing quickly, then the VCs came in and they said, you know, this looks like a good opportunity to invest. So he then received a $27 million in venture capital money to launch this thing and scale it up. He got them from a couple of the people. One person that invested money was the founder of Flickr. Another person was a founder of Delicious. They got a big block of money from Union Square Ventures, which is a VC in the area, and a couple of other people helped them raise the $27 million. Now, in January of 2008, he got another $27 million in funding from another group of investors, except Union Square Ventures was also part of the second round. Now, in September 2008, Etsy hired Chad Dickerson, who formerly worked at Yahoo as the chief technology officer. Now, in 2009, this was about 2.5 years after they had launched the site, Etsy claimed 2.4 million registered users in 150 countries and more than 155,000 active vendors who sold 58 million worth of goods in the first 5 months of 2009. Etsy's got a permanent office called the Etsy Labs in Brooklyn, New York. Currently has only 70 employees.
Huh.
Now, this is how the company makes money. And I actually set up a couple of stores just to see how it would work. I wanted to set up two. Can one person set up two sites, two stores, or do you have to actually have two email accounts? So I just set up two sort of bogus stores to see how it would work. I could set up a store in about 20 minutes. You have to make a banner at the top of your store, and the banner is 560 pixels by 100 pixels. So that's probably the biggest work to get the banner made relating to the store. And I set them up for about 20 minutes. So each time you add an item listed, you list an item on your site, they charge you 20 cents. So suppose I would make a potholder and I'd upload a potholder, I'd pay 20 cents. But if I have 10 potholders for sale, I would pay 20 cents times 10.
Mm-hmm.
So for each item listed, you pay 20 cents. And then whenever any item is sold, you pay Etsy 3.5% of the sales price. So that's really how it works. It's actually quite a good system.
Cool.
Now, Kalin said that the company is now profitable. Now, this is a quote from March 2010. So the company is now profitable, and he's planning to go public sometime next year. So this is where he's going to get his big golden payout.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another idea, very similar to what we had last week, where we had somebody sort of bumming around, and they needed something. They started working on it, and it turned into a great idea.
Four things come to mind. This is something that you preach on this show all the time. If you want to do something like this, learn how to do it. That way you can put it on your resume when you
right.
go out. Yeah. I mean, it's easy to learn how to do these things.
It is.
It's
easy to – I mean, he taught himself PHP, Python, SQL, and Linux. I mean, you can teach yourself these things.
Mm-hmm.
So he just set up a website and in the process, you know, develop something useful.
Yep.
So a lot of our students actually end up doing that. We integrate projects throughout the classes that they take so that they end up having a portfolio of projects that they have actually developed. So when they get out of school, they just don't say, oh, yeah, I've got a degree. Well, of course they have a degree, but they also say, in addition to that, look at what I've done. They have a portfolio.
Exactly.
Which is really quite good. So there we go. Robert Kalin. I think this is a great site. If you've got crafts at home that you're making, you'd like to sell them, go to ETSY.com. Now, I wondered where the name ETSY came from.
I was just going to ask you that because I've been sitting over here Googling it.
I know.
Go ahead
and
with the answer if you have one. There isn't one, is there?
No, there's not an answer. And so I went to, of course, the site which looks up the source of names called the Name Inspector. The nameinspector.com. Now, this is what the Name Inspector has reported. They said that when he first developed the site, he hinted that it came from Federico Fellini's film Eight and a Half. Now, I went and looked up Eight and a Half. I don't know where Etsy came out of Eight and a Half, but then later on he denied that. Then in a television spot, he suggested another time that it came from Etsy, which means in Latin, and if. So, and then another Etsy developer said that actually it stood for the sentence, it's a secret to everybody. So, actually, nobody knows. He probably just came up with a site that rhymed with Betsy.
It's pretty funny.
Nobody really knows.
We wound up on the same the Name Inspector website independently, and some think that maybe because it looks like eBay that it that there's a grab there. But interesting site. I wonder if there's a way that they police it to make sure people are selling only crafts and things that they made.
Well, that is one of the problems that they recently people have been selling things that others made, which is kind of a violation.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And so they're saying, well, how are you going to police that? And I mean, how can you police it if people say they've made it? So they've actually decided just to ignore it.
Well, I'm looking at some stuff on this website, and one thing really grabbed me, there's some cool stuff here. Eco handmade vegan flats in olive green. Now, I didn't know vegan shoes.
No,
I've never worn shoes made out of meat before.
No, that's that's a vegan. Vegan shoes, yeah, you know. In fact, every pair of shoes I've ever worn has been vegan. Oh no, leather. I mean,
I know I'm being silly, leather comes.
You can't have leather shoes. That wouldn't be vegan.
That wouldn't
would
be
it?
Vegan, exactly.
No, that's
so these are made of. Go figure. They're made of hemp.
Yeah,
that's right. Everything in the virtual faculty lounge is made of hemp. Anyway, you're listening to the best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by. Your chance to win a fabulous prize of food is next. This is Tech Talk.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here. That's right. I would be this guy right here. My name is Jim Russ, and this is the Pop Quiz. Hope you were paying attention to profiles in IT just mere moments ago, because we were talking about Robert Kalin, the guy who founded Etsy.com. Now, this is a fill-in-the-blank question today. It is, if you want to sell something on Etsy.com, you must blank. If you know the answer to that question, call us now at 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Once again, the number is 877-936-9333. If you're the winner, hang on the phone. It's going to be a few minutes before we get to you to answer that question, because we've got another segment here. It's kind of long. The prize, as usual, is tickets for two for lunch at the Escoffier at Stratford University. Fine dining on the campus of Stratford University in Falls Church, or at Cafe Kareem in Woodbridge, possibly soon at the sports bar that's coming to the campus in Short Pump, the suburbs of Richmond. So now it is time for this.
Profiles in IT, Twin Spin.
Today we're going to be talking about a local boy, Aaron Patzer. Now, Aaron Patzer is an internet entrepreneur and founder of Mint.com.
Talking the flavor mint.
No. Mint.com allows users to create an anonymous account, then add their bank information, credit card information, investment accounts. It pulls all the transactional and balance information from those accounts and creates detailed graphs and charts analyzing their investments. Then they can put in all of their expenses. It analyzes their budget, and he has various kinds of proprietary algorithms that make suggestions on how they could get better return on their savings, how they could save more money. His goal is to help people manage their money better. Now, Patzer received a BSEE, Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering, from Duke University in 2002, and a Master's of Science in Electrical Engineering from Princeton University in 2004.
So he's one of your guys.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now Patzer got his first work experience in the internet boom years, 98 through 2000, this before he even graduated. He started a little company called GetAWebsite.com. Now, GetAWebsite.com didn't go anywhere, but he kind of learned the ropes of a business plan. And then he worked for Miadora.com, which was an online jewelry store. He was basically helping them do some program. He served as a senior research assistant for Fraser Research. This was a startup company that was working on optical networks, started by some folks that came out of AT&T or Bell Labs. Now, he worked at Fraser Research. This stint wasn't too long, from May 2003 until September 2003. He was developing software tools for optical networks. So his first big job after graduating only lasted 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Mom. Then he
moved back home.
No, then he went to work for IBM. And he had a job as an engineer at IBM working on circuit engineering. And he was at IBM from March 2004 until August 2004.
Job
March,
hopper, huh?
April, May, June, July, August. Another six months stint. Sorry, Mom. Mom's saying, you know, we sent this guy.
We're never going to get this kid out
of here. We sent this guy to Princeton. You know, we got all these huge student loans.
Can he hold a job down?
And what's the guy doing? So he finally got his most stable job since getting. He went to NASCentric. Now, NASCentric was actually a company that was working in circuit design, and his job, he was a software engineer. His job was to basically design circuit simulation software. So he developed event-based circuit simulation software so they could simulate it before they built it. Now, mm-hmm. He actually worked there from August 2004 until February 2006. This was a full 18 months.
That's pretty good for him.
It's getting better. And during that time, he managed to save a little money. Now, he was a guy that really liked to keep his finances intact. He really worked on saving, you know, investing his money properly.
Mm-hmm.
So every weekend, he would spend hours updating all of his account balances. He used Intuit Quicken. He tried Microsoft Money for a while, but he went back to Intuit Quicken. And he got fed up entering on all of his balances manually into Quicken. He was so much manual work, and he spent so much time tinkering with it that he just got fed up with it. So he said, well, you know, why don't I just develop my own software
uh-huh.
for tracking all my investments? It pulls in all of my investments, automatically updates the spreadsheet, tells me, you know, that goes into my budget, tells me how much I should save, and it's sort of totally interactive. So It would give him recommendations. So he started working on this idea, which is kind of sort of his secret interest, because he liked to manage money. And he had, in working 18 months at NASCENTRIC, he had managed to save $100,000, because he's quite the saver.
Uh-huh. It seems that way.
So he quit after 18 months.
Well, it's his track record, so.
He quit, and he said, you know, Mom, now that I got $100,000, I'm going to work on writing this personal, money management software to compete with Intuit Quicken.
At this point, she's pulling her hair out.
I'm going to quit. I'm going to live on my savings. I'm not coming back home. I'm going to live on my savings, and I'm just going to write the software, and I'm just going to make something happen with it. I think his mom was getting a little worried, because it had been 6 months,
18 months,
and then he quit. So, I mean, he didn't really have any place of business. So he worked alone in his room for 7 months.
Oh, my.
He worked 7 days a week, 14 hours a day, writing this software. Now, he wrote the alpha version of Mint using Java J2E. That'd be the J2 Enterprise Edition of Java. That's a software development tool.
Mm-hmm.
It's a software development environment. And as a database, he used MySQL, which is an open source database. I really like that. So using J2EE, Java 2 Enterprise Edition with Microsoft, with MySQL, he developed the alpha version of this. Now, his mom's really worried about him. I mean, he's staying in his room 7 days a week.
14
hours a day. She's thinking, what exactly is Aaron doing in his room?
Mm-hmm.
But he did develop this this product. Now, he ended up getting five patented or pending or patent pending technologies, which are the core of the business. Now, around 2006, see, he can remember he quit. He quit Mint in February 2006. So, 7 months later. In 2006, late 2006, he started networking, trying to sell this. He says, you know, I got this great accounting software. You know, I can probably beat out Microsoft Money. I can beat out Intuit Quicken. And, you know, he wasn't getting much traction. And finally, he was, like, shopping it around, and he went to some networking conference, and he met the guy who had founded Half.com.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy agreed to listen to his elevator pitch. And he said, well, you know, this is not a bad idea. 2 weeks later, after getting that connection, he received his first round of funding. He wrapped up a $12 million Series B funding package, early the next year. Now, ultimately, he raised around $31 million in venture capital money. I mean, this is not bad considering the time frame. This was after the dot-com crash.
Exactly.
This was around 2006, early 2007. Now, he formally launched Mint.com September 2007 at TechCrunch 40, which was a conference designed to highlight young entrepreneurs in information technology. Out of the 700 applicants who were chosen to present, he was one of the 52 that was able to make a presentation, and he ended up winning the first place award and won $50K.
Pretty amazing. That's what 7 months in your room will do.
That's right. Now, in less than a year, his site had 400,000 users. Now, Mint.com received two Webby Awards and was named one of the 100 best products of 2008 by PC World. In September 2008, Patzer was listed in Inc. magazine's top 30. Under 30.
Mm-hmm.
So, finally, around 2008, his mom was beginning to, you know, breathe easily. That maybe, because now, you know, maybe her son was going to actually make good on all of his student loans.
Mm-hmm.
So, at this time, Intuit Quicken began to notice software.
The same program he'd been using and really, it gave him the impetus to do this.
That's right.
Kind of interesting, too.
That's right. So they came to him, and they kind of showed an interest. And he negotiated, and he sold his program and his company, Mint.com, to Intuit for $170 million, not in stock options, in cash.
You could buy an awfully big room for $170
million. Now, what I couldn't tell was how much equity he had given up to the VC. So I don't know how much of that $170 million was his, but that was quite a result and really gutsy. I wanted to highlight this guy because it was gutsy. He just quit his job and worked for 7 months in his room to develop this. Now, the deal closed November 2009, which was 5 months ago. Now, he was named one of the top 40 executives under 40 by Fortune. He was made one of the top five money heroes of 2008. He was a 2008 tech pioneer by the World Economics Forum in Davos. Now, he was then hired by Intuit as VP and general manager of the personal finance group, and he's been there since November 2009. That's 5 months.
Okay, I was just about to start counting.
So how long do you think he's going to be there, Jim?
Summer's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot of money. I think he's going to do some traveling.
I'm thinking
beach time.
I'm thinking May. He's out of there.
Mm-hmm.
I think 6 weeks. He doesn't like to work for other people.
No.
I figure six months.
He's
that's about it.
He's got all this money. Why would you want to? Well.
Now, according to Patzer, about two-thirds of the site's users actually changed their spending habits after getting Mint.com's personalized saving suggestions. Actually, the site is pretty good. I sort of looked around. I didn't put all my stuff in it, but I looked around at what it could do. It actually is a very nice way to do online budgeting.
Well, he certainly spent a lot of time producing and developing it. So
it is. So the website is www.mint.com, and there's a local Duke grad, Aaron Patzer, who made good.
Is he from around this area, or is the Duke University the local connection?
It's just the Duke is the
Duke
local
University.
Connection.
Gotcha. We don't know where that room was where he spent 7 months putting this all together.
I don't know anything about what he did in the room other than write software.
I'm sure he had some grilled cheese sandwiches in there.
Yeah.
Maybe some chocolate milk or something like that.
It could be.
He is actually from Indiana. I looked that up. Okay, time to play the game. Let's go to line number two. This is Mark calling us from Rockville, Maryland. Mark, good morning, and how are you?
Doing fine. How about yourself?
Good. Do you listen to us often?
Pretty much, yes.
Good. We're glad to have you on board, and here's your chance to win some free food. We were talking earlier about Robert Kalin, the guy that started Etsy.com. If you want to sell something on Etsy, you have to...
make it yourself.
That is the correct answer. Thank you for listening to the show, Mark, and I'm going to put you back on hold, and we'll get your information to Andrew and send you out the tickets next week. Thank you for listening, and thanks for calling today, and have a great Memorial Day weekend, okay? All right, this is the Best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by, be right back with more right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Best of Tech Talk here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Now it's time for this.
Let's talk about hacking trivia.
Yeah, that's better. Yeah.
Hacking trivia. Now, Hacker originally meant one who makes furniture with an axe. You know, because you're hacking the wood.
Right.
So one who makes furniture with an axe. I mean, that's probably not the fine Victorian furniture, I don't think.
No, I think it's more rough-hewn than that,
I'd say it's more, you know, more pioneer-style furniture.
Exactly.
Now, perhaps it's because of the blunt nature of this approach that the word came to mean someone who takes pleasure in unconventional solutions to technical obstacles. Now, that is really wordsmanship on explaining breaking into somebody's computer account.
Yeah.
Unconventional solutions to a technical obstacle. Obviously, this was written by a hacker.
Yeah.
Now, computer hacking was born in the late 1950s by members of the MIT's Tech Model Railroad Club. They were obsessed with electric switching, and they began to prepare punch cards to control an IBM 704 mainframe. I guess that, you know, they wanted to control the switches. So one of the club's early programs, it actually was code that illuminated the lights on the mainframe console to make it look like a ball was zipping back and forth to the left, like
mm-hmm.
Pong.
That's funny.
In the early 70s, hacking really got a great push with the guy by John Draper, who was Captain Crunch. He used a toy whistle that matched the 2600 hertz tone used by AT&T for long-distance switching. This gave him access to call routing, and he was able to, you know, make all kinds of free phone calls. He had a brief stint in jail for this.
Well, we talked about John Draper. I got to dig him up for one weekend when you're gone.
He was a prior profile and IT guy. But mm-hmm. before they struck it rich, Apple founders John Wozniak and Steve Jobs made and sold the blue boxes with the 2600
right.
hertz.
Yes.
So they made money. This was the electronic version of Draper's whistle. Now, using the blue box, Wozniak crank called the Pope's residence in Vatican City and pretended to be Henry Kissinger.
Oh, jeez.
Now, this is just the kind of hacking trivia that really plays well at a cocktail party.
Yeah.
Okay, hacking went Hollywood in 1983 with the movie War Games when a whiz kid broke into Defense Department computers. The same year, six Milwaukee teens hacked into Los Alamos Laboratory that held all of our nuclear secrets.
Stuff, yeah.
Yeah. In 1988, Robert T. Morris created a worm, or a self-replicating program, purportedly to evaluate the Internet. But the worm reproduced so well that it practically shut down the Internet, and it caused a multi-million dollar fix.
Mm-hmm.
It also led to Morris's felony conviction, the first ever under computer fraud. Now, Morris is now teaching computer science at MIT.
And this is the best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. If you want to learn more about this show, you can go to techtalkonline.com. Want to learn more about Stratford University, go to stratford.edu. We'll be back in just a moment.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers, here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Best of Tech Talk. We end up today with food science.
Foods with heat. Now, this is the heat or burning sensation experienced when consuming a hot sauce. This isn't hot because you heat it up. Now, the hotness that you taste when you have a very hot item or a hot pepper is a chemical called capsaicin, C-A-P-S-A-I-C-I-N, capsaicin. Now, the perceived heat of hot sauces is measured by this, what they call the Scoville scale. Now, the hottest sauce scientifically is one rated at 16 million Scoville units, which is pure capsaicin. Now, this was named after Wilbur Scoville, who developed the Scoville organoleptic test in 1912.
This is new technology, huh?
Yeah. 16 Scoville units are equivalent to one part capsaicin per million. Thus, pure capsaicin is 16 million Scoville units.
Now, how does one go get some Indian food or something and then figure out how many Scoville units of heat are?
Okay, now, okay, here's the thing. See, I was interested in Tabasco sauce because I've got a lot of friends who use Tabasco sauce. Tabasco sauce is rated between 2,500 and 5,000 Scoville units.
That's pretty hot.
Yeah, it's pretty hot. And that's of course, and Tabasco is a Louisiana-style hot sauce, and it includes peppers, vinegar, and water. Examples of that Louisiana-style hot sauce are Tabasco sauce, Texas Pete, Frank's Red Hot. Now, there's also another kind of sauce, Mexican-style. Mexican hot sauces typically focus more on flavor than an intense heat. The sauces are hot, but individual flavors of the peppers are pronounced, and vinegar is used sparingly. Okay, chipotle is, for instance, a popular Mexican hot sauce, which uses smoked jalapenos for its flavor. Now, some sauces produced in Mexico are high vinegar content Louisiana-style sauces. Now, Asian sauces generally contain more ingredients than Louisiana or Mexican. These sauces are generally sweeter and often rely on garlic and other seasonings for their flavor. Thai and Indian sauces are some of the hottest sauces made. Now, if you get something which is just really hot and it's just burning your mouth, how can you quench that burn?
How can you quench that burn, Doc?
Capsaicin, might not have known this, is an alkaloid oil.
Okay.
You might not have known that.
But it's pretty good for you because there's dietary supplements that have it.
That's right. And as such, it's soluble in acid, fat, or alcohol. Now, the effects of ingestion of a hot sauce deemed too hot by the consumer can be partially remedied by drinking things such as milk, which binds with the capsaicin alkaloid, neutralizing it. So I would recommend drinking milk because it neutralizes it.
How about a stick of butter?
Well, here the thing is, if you do something that that the alkaloid dissolves in, like alcohol or fat, it spreads it. it takes that intense in one point and it spreads it through your whole mouth and throat.
Okay, so that was a bad idea then.
So really, probably drinking alcohol or eating butter, it will eventually wash it down, but your best bet is to have a base like milk, which is going to bind with the capsaicin alkaloid and neutralize it. So that's probably much all you wanted to know about food science.
That's pretty fascinating.
You can actually look up the Scoville units. It was kind of a subjective test. There's kind of a long history with it. And it wasn't until they could actually measure the concentration of capsaicin later on with some molecular microscopy that they were able to actually get at the science of what was going on here.
We will see you again next week here on the Best of Tech Talk.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
72 degrees, partly cloudy skies at 10 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning, and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this very fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located